So they're doing their own thing now, but we're going to finish up our series. We have 3 weeks left. So this week we have class, next week we have class, the week after that we don't have class, and then we'll finish up on the 28th. So then October we'll start a totally something different. So today we're going to be talking about bullying, Jackson.
Yes.
As you're throwing things at me, you big meanie. So we're talking about bullying. So, as I normally do, I don't have a PowerPoint. I'm really sorry. I was trying to get this together last night, and then I was like, I don't have time for the PowerPoint. I know. I'm sorry. No, I did think about you last night, and I'm like, Hallie's going to be really upset that I don't have a PowerPoint.
And
I was falling asleep last night at like 1 in the morning trying to just get everything done. That's normal. Alright. Okay, definition of bullying. Wow, look at you guys. Okay, the intentional, repeated, verbal, physical, or technology-based aggression directed at someone perceived as vulnerable or weaker, creating a power imbalance. It goes beyond typical teasing or conflict and can include actions like physical assault, name-calling, spreading rumors, social exclusion, and cyberbullying. The goal is to cause harm and establish a hostile environment, potentially leading to emotional distress, poor academic performance, and other negative long-term consequences. Y'all know what bullying is. There's a bunch of different definitions of it, but that's the one that I chose. I read a bunch of different things, and I'm like, this is a decent one for what we're talking about. So, as I normally do, here's some stats about bullying. So, 19.2% of students in your age group from 12 to 18 report being bullied, and about 15% of them report being bullied repeatedly. So, that's... Yeah, I mean, stats about a lot of these things are hard to pin down, because like now you're asking people to report that they've been bullied. Some people don't report on that, so...
But also, there's like...
The numbers could be...
There's no way it's only 19%.
It's really hard to think. It's honestly, it's really hard to even tell if someone is getting bullied, especially with girls, because like a girl can be like completely destroying you behind your back, to your face, she's so nice. You just don't know.
True. Yes, that's one element of it. Plus, yeah. So the components of bullying. I mean, I feel like it used to be bullying if you would just kind of pick on somebody. A lot of what I was reading now is like, it has to be repeated for like over an extended period of time. Like if you tease somebody or mess with somebody once or twice, maybe that's not bullying. Maybe you still consider it bullying. So there's like some variables there. And 19.2%, I don't know if that's accurate or not. You guys are in middle school and high school. I mean, you guys are in high school now, but like you see it or hopefully aren't part of it. But I mean, some of you have been part of it or are part of it. So you guys know maybe better than some of these stats, but that's just the stats that I found. I found a bunch of different stuff. Of the people who were reported being bullied, 21.6% were online or by text. Do you guys feel like that's probably low also?
Yeah.
Only 21% of people who were reported being bullied said they were bullied online or by text.
Anyone.
Yeah, cyberbullying I feel like is, yeah.
Somebody offends you or whatever. It's supposed to take off
around
us, but we're
going to
block them from
the
profile so they can't see it.
Mm.
But we're
going to
bully.
Dude, honestly, it's coming from people don't block them because the person they're bullying just
replies
and makes them matter.
All right. 16% of high school students were electronically bullied in the 12 months prior to the survey. Sounds like you guys think that's probably low. Also, different types of bullying, so having rumors spread about them, being made fun of, called names, insulted, pushed, shoved, tripped, spit on, being excluded from activities, social media or communications, that's what you guys are talking about. That one's only like 3.7%, so I feel like that's gotta be low. Being bullied by your friends is different. We were talking about this last night and Brenda was like... I mean, I guess it depends. Some of it is just our way of loving our children. You know, like,
I think you guys should have put parental abuse on the survey.
That's a good one.
I mean, that wasn't one of the ones that we included. Maybe next time we do a survey like this, we can include parental abuse. I'm not going to do a whole... I mean, I could talk a lot about parental abuse, I guess, but... Not my own parents. Me abusing my children. Not physically. Verbally. Emotionally, you know? We're gonna have to cut this report of the recording out.
The big difference between your parents is being their authority or messing with you or teasing you or giving you consequences and actual abuse. And with bullying, there's a big difference between your friends messing with you and actual bullying.
Yes, that's true.
We don't need to make light of either one.
Because Britt straight up punched mom like 2 nights ago.
She scared him and Lane.
This is on a recording.
I thought you were meaning like
it was just like. Anyways, I will say, like Brenda was telling me about this last night, because when I was reading, I don't remember if I was reading you the definition or started talking about it somehow.
No, we were talking about encouraging people and not.
Oh yeah, we were talking about something different, like, and yeah, and then she brought up the fact that this is pretty much what I do to a lot of you guys, and it's in love, like it's, you know. It's my love language is sarcasm, Brenda always says, and so, you know, being sarcastic and messing with people is, as long as it's fun for both sides, then it's not, I don't consider that bullying. That's just, teasing your friends and having fun is different than actually being bullied by somebody.
He bullied all of his students.
I think that, like, creates a bond, you know? I think it's, like, a good thing. We don't need to hear that right now. Okay, so bullying happens for a variety of reasons, a variety of ways, to a variety of different kind of people. The Bible does not have the word bully in it or bullying, so that's not a biblical word. But the principles that we can get from, because the whole point of the reason we're doing these topics is so we can find out what you guys are struggling with. So this was like, I think, 9th or 10th on the list of, I think we have 13, so I think it was like 9th on the list. So it's not something that a lot of you guys who took the survey are dealing with compared to a lot of the other things. But it is something that I think there was a couple people that struggle with it a lot. And so it is something that we do need to talk about. So what does the Bible have to say about it? What are some principles from the Bible that we can take that can help us if you're being bullied? Hopefully you're not, but if you are the bully in the situation, you know, what does the Bible say about those things? So... obviously, you know, it doesn't take a lot to figure out that, you know, that the God's nature is not found in bullying. It doesn't take a lot to find out or realize that, you know, it's wrong to bully people to the point, you know, if you're repeatedly, either you or you've seen it or are the one being bullied, when you're repeatedly, like, beat down, made fun of, your stuff gets messed with, people are calling you names, you're being excluded from things, you know, you're physically being attacked in some way, like, that obviously wears down a person's psyche, and it wears down, you know, a lot of people, you know, get really into a deep, dark place because they feel like everybody around them hates them or excludes them from things. And so it can be, you know, on an extreme situation, it can be really bad. Even in a best-case scenario, it still is, like, demoralizing and frustrating when you feel like people, like, you don't fit in or people don't like you for whatever reason, and they kind of continue to pick on you. So obviously that's not God's heart on how we should treat people or how we should be treated. So it doesn't take, you know, a deep Bible study to figure out that, you know, that the Bible does not agree with bullying, that bullying is wrong. I started trying to think about, you know, are there stories in the Bible that that I could think of where, you know, bullying was a component of it? Can you guys think of anything where, like, in the Bible where a bullying was part of it, or, I mean, there's a few examples, but you guys have anything that you think of? Huh? Yeah. Every day he went out and taunted them. Yeah. For 40 days he went out taunting the armies of Israel, tempting them to try to come out and come up against him. Yeah, they kind of entrapped Daniel. They made the law, and then they like kind of like watched him. And when he was praying, the law was that he couldn't pray anymore. And so they caught him praying, and then turned him in. That's kind of form of bullying, I guess. What were you saying? Pharaoh, yeah. Pharaoh and Moses, they're back and forth. Pharaoh was when they first came in, Pharaoh made things harder on the people of Israel. Joseph and his brothers, you know, Joseph was bullied by his brothers. They hated him because he got the preferential treatment from dad. He got the coat, and, you know, dad was like open that he loved Joseph more than anybody else. And, so they bullied him. They certainly picked on him. I'm sure they teased him behind his back and things. And then eventually they plotted to kill him, but stopped short of that and just sold him into slavery instead. Anybody else have anything else? Any other examples, Bible stories involving bullying?
I'd say Jesus, but he was kind of like tortured.
Yeah, so Jesus is the one we're going to talk about. Jesus was bullied, I would say. I mean, yeah, he was, well, not necessarily just in the fact of his crucifixion, but throughout his time.
Yeah, like, especially when he went back to, like, his homeland, and everyone's like, dude, you know who's
king
over?
Mm-hmm.
They bullied him for, like,
yep. Anything else besides Jesus?
No.
If it was the kid you grew up with?
Yeah. What the heck? This kid's weird.
All right. So, yeah. So Jesus is the one we're gonna talk about. So at Jesus' time, the leadership of Israel, the Jewish leaders, were, you know, the cultural and religious leaders. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, the chief priests, all the people that were in a position of leadership and authority in the Jewish people, they're still to this day, the Jewish culture and the Jewish religion are very like tied together. And so if you're like a practicing Jew, a lot of the culture ties in with a lot of the religious things. And so the people who were in charge in Jesus' day, the chief priests, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, it talks about the word elders or scribes, all those different people, they were present at most of the significant events in Jesus' time on earth in his ministry. They were present really from his baptism all the way until his death. They were pretty much, most of the time whenever you see Jesus healing somebody, feeding the 5,000, you know, he's raising people from the dead. There's usually these religious cultural leaders that are there, and they're trying to detract from what he's doing, or they question what he's doing, or they accuse him of things that are true or not true. So the word, just in the Gospels alone, the phrase chief priests shows up 55 times. The word Pharisee or Pharisees shows up 88 times. Sadducees shows up only 9 times. I would have thought it was more than that, but so they're involved in just about everything that Jesus does throughout the gospel. So they're constantly trying to undermine his teachings. They're trying to you know, expose him as a fraud in front of, you know, all the people that were following him. They weren't like, most of the time they weren't just coming to him one on one and saying, "Hey, listen, today you said you were the Son of God. Like, what's up with that? You know, we were waiting on the Messiah. Is that really you?" And like, it wasn't like that. It was like in front of everybody, you know, like he just does some miraculous thing, or he somehow declares himself to be God, or, you know, he does something, and then in front of everybody, they're, you know, accusing, or they're trying to undermine what he's doing. They accused him of some serious crimes that carried the death penalty, right? The fact that they were the ones who ultimately brought him to the crucifixion, but it was because they accused him of blasphemy, right? Saying that he was God, which obviously he was, so it wasn't blasphemous, but for anybody else to say that, it would have been. So they were trying to uphold the law, but they were not doing it the proper way. They were bullies. One of the elements of bullying that is present, besides like the repeated aspect of it, is an imbalance of power. So a lot of times you see the popular kid bully the less popular kid, right? There's a power imbalance. Like this person has, you know, the popular person has people following them, or they have, you know, other people on their side, whereas like the less popular person might not have people on their side or as many people on their side. So there's an imbalance of power, or it's, you know, somebody who has a, you know, maybe the teacher puts this person in charge of, you know, some element of the class. And so now they have some authority, and so there's a power imbalance in the relationship. And so with the Pharisees, the Sadducees, all these leaders, they actually didn't have more power than Jesus, but perceived power they had, right? I mean, they had the following of the Jewish people. They were in charge. They had the authority in that time. And of course, Jesus, you know, he's God, so he was not lacking in power or authority. But from their perspective, they thought that they were doing maybe the right thing. They thought that they had the law on their side. They thought, hey, you know, this guy is coming out here saying that he's Jesus, that he's the Son of God. And like, no way, that cannot be true. I mean, think about the story of the life of Paul, right? Paul was persecuting Christians. Why was he persecuting Christians? He didn't hate them. I mean, he did hate them, but why did he hate them? Yeah, he thought that he was stopping this false gospel, this spread of, you know, these people that were turning their back on Judaism and turning their back on, you know, following the law, and they were turning to follow this guy named Jesus. And so he's like, man, this is not right. This is a false gospel. This is a false teaching. And he was trying, legitimately was trying, Hallie, goodness gracious, girl. He was trying to keep things, he was trying to keep people from falling away and being carried away with this false gospel. Until finally one day Jesus meets him on the road to Damascus and is like, hey, stop persecuting my people. This is real. Like, I am the Son of God. I did come. I did die. I did raise again. These people are following me. This is the right thing. Like, what you're doing is, you're in the wrong. And when Paul recognized that, I mean, he turned the world upside down the other way, right? He went the total extreme, the opposite direction. And so he thought what he was doing was right. And so I'm sure that there were some Pharisees and some Sadducees who were in the same boat. Like, this guy is coming in here teaching something false, right? We would do the same thing if somebody came into our church and was trying to teach something that was opposed to what the Bible says. We would try to oppose that person, right? I mean, hopefully we wouldn't bully them, but we would probably go around and tell people, listen, what this guy is saying is not accurate. This does not line up with what the Bible says, right? We would tell people, don't follow this person. This person is misleading you or is misleading people. So be careful about what things that he is saying or she is saying, and be careful about following that person. And so we would do the same kinds of things. So I'm sure there were some in these Pharisees and Sadducees and these chief priests. I'm sure there were some that you know, thought that what they were doing was right in trying to undermine Jesus and publicly accuse him and question everything that he was doing. Turn over to Matthew chapter 21. Let's actually open the Bible and look at some of this stuff. Matthew 21, verse 23, where we're going to start. Anybody need Bible? Shane, you need a Bible?
Sit at a table.
There
are
six
tables.
Need a Bible?
Five tables.
I just need to go to the
bedroom. Sorry, that did not slide like I thought it would.
21
All right, 21:23 says, and when he was come into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching and said, by what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority? Okay, so they might have genuinely been wondering, hey, dude, what are you doing? Who gave you the authority to be talking about this? And verse 24, and Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you will tell me, I and likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, whence was it? From heaven or of men? And they reasoned among them, or reasoned with themselves, saying, if we shall say from heaven, he will say unto us, why did ye not believe him? Then believe him. But if we say of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet. And they answered Jesus and said, we cannot tell. And he said unto them, neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. So this happened a lot in Jesus' ministry where they would like publicly accuse him of something, right? Or question him. And he would ask him back with another question. He's like, all right, I'll tell you this if you tell me the answer to this question. And he poses something really difficult to them. Like, hey, you know, baptism of John, you guys agree with it or do you not agree with it? And they're like, oh man, we can't. If we say one thing, then, you know, then he's going to say, well, we should be following him. If we say this other thing, then, you know, then everybody's going to freak out. And so like, what are we supposed to do? And they're like, okay, we can't really answer that question. That's a difficult question to answer. He's like, well then fine, I'm not going to answer your question. Right? So Jesus handled these guys, obviously very wisely. He's Jesus, so like, not a surprise. He did things the right way and he, you know, always had the right answer or the right thing to say to these people. But he handled them with wisdom and he handled them, you know, not confrontationally. We don't see Jesus getting in fist fights, right? We do see him flip over the tables, which happened earlier in this chapter. But in general, we don't see Jesus angry, yelling, screaming, fighting, kicking. You know, even when he's arrested, what does Peter do? He pulls out his sword, chops off this guy's ear. And Jesus is like, hold on, wait, everybody stop. Let me fix this guy's ear, puts it back on. And he's like, put your sword away, like, chill out. This is how it's supposed to be. Yes, Hallie.
Technically, like, he was angry, but he wasn't, like, in the moment angry when he flipped the tables. He, like, he sat down in the middle of the thing and braided the whip. That takes, like,
I'm not saying he was angry, like, he wasn't, like, he had righteous indignation. He was righteously angry about it. And it wasn't, like, in the moment where he just was, like, pissed off about something and he starts flipping tables over.
It was like meditative anger because he like sat there for hours.
Yeah.
Away.
Yeah. Okay. Turn to Matthew chapter 9. We're flipping around Matthew a decent amount. I'm going to read Matthew 9 verse 9. Hold on. Read 9 through... Wait, is this what I want? Yeah. 9.
Yes.
9, 6, 1.
Hmm? Well, hold on. What am I doing here?
That was a thing for Adrian, that for a pep rally was...
All right, read 9 through 13.
Verse 9.
Yeah, verse 9 through verse 13, yeah.
And as Jesus passed forth from thence, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the receipt of custom. And he saith unto him, follow me. And he arose and followed him. And it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And the Pharisees saw it. They said unto his disciples, why eat your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye, learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous sinners to repentance.
Okay, so again, they're questioning. They're like, hey, why is Jesus sitting with these sinners over here? You know, like, and they're not asking him directly. It says when they saw it, then they said to his disciples, why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? And so then Jesus hears it and he's like, okay, I'm going to address this right now before rumors start swirling, before et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm here for these people, right? I'm here for the people who need me, which is all of you, but you don't recognize it yet. You think you're righteous on your own. So I'm starting with these guys. I'm here to deal with these guys, right? And he was there to grab Matthew to be part of his 12, but then he sits down for lunch with them. And, you know, at the time, the Pharisees and the leaders are like, hey, we're not supposed to eat with like sinners. And Jesus is like, you know, without saying exactly, he's like, that's all of you. Like all of us are sinners. What are we talking about here? You know, you guys think that you're righteous, but you're not. And so, you know, again, it's just another element of the way that they were trying to undermine and it just repeatedly. I have a few other examples, but for time's sake, we're not going to go to all of them. But you guys know, if you've read the Gospels or you've been around church a while, you know that this kind of stuff where they're just like constantly questioning what he's doing was happening, you know, almost all the time. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of it's not even recorded, the things that were happening. Some of the times that they were questioning him and some of the times that things like this came up. And so... there's a bunch of different examples of it, but we're gonna skip through the rest of them. So I think for myself, a lot of times, I don't know about you guys how you think about Jesus, but like when I think about Jesus, a lot of times I think about him as like meek and humble, right? Which he definitely was those things. But I mean, think about like the kind of person. I mean, he's a carpenter, so he's probably like somewhat strong or like. You know, like, I don't know if he's like a physically imposing type of presence, but I mean, he was like, you know, a man's man type of guy. And, you know, he gets up and he calms the storm, you know, he's raising people from the dead. He's not just like this quiet, shy, you know, like soft dude. You know, he's like, you know, he's powerful. Yeah. He has authority. Like, I mean, even you know, here they're talking about, or the one we just looked at, they're talking about, hey, like, what? Who gave you the authority to do this? And, you know, Jesus doesn't answer back and be like, hey, I have all the authority I need. You know, he answers him back with another question. But, you know, Jesus is not just like this meek, weak type of person. You know, Jesus was a powerful dude. He had, you know, the power of God inside of him. He was emotionally strong, physically strong, probably. You know, he definitely was not one to back down. You never see Jesus, like, being bullied, you know, and, like, backing down or cowering to someone. Even in his, you know, in his trial when he's about to be crucified, you know, they're asking him all these questions and he's like, you said it, you know, like you're the one that said that about me. You know, it's not like, oh, you know, I'm so afraid over here and like, you know, he doesn't want to talk. No, Jesus is, he has like the power, but it's like calm. He's like calm about the power that he has. And so I think sometimes for me, I don't know if you guys do it, just like we think about Jesus as like this. I don't say I think about him as a soft person, but I think about him like maybe a little more quiet and soft spoken than maybe he was. It takes a strong, tough type of person to be able to do the things that he did. And obviously he's God and all of that, but, Jesus was accused of a lot of things and he was, undermined a lot throughout his ministry. And so the way that he responded and the way that he, didn't fight back and the way that even in his crucifixion, what does it say in, somebody go to Isaiah chapter 53 verse 7. Read that when you get there. Isaiah 53.
Verse 7.
He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, he openeth not his mouth.
Okay, so, like, that's how Jesus, he went quietly, but it wasn't like he was doing it because of what it meant, right? He was going to the cross, not fighting back, not, you know, snapping his fingers and saving himself. He was doing it, like, quietly, calmly, but, you know, secure in what he was doing. He was doing it, for a purpose. And so, I want to hit on a few of the things that we talked about at the beginning, just some ways that bullying, looks like in our lives, and then just compare that with a few of the things that Jesus had. So, like having rumors spread about them. Did Jesus have rumors spread about him? Yeah, like left and right, all the time. Like even like in this story that we just read in Matthew chapter 9, right? There's constantly, you know, people are trying to, undermine and question and spread, false things about who God was. And how does Jesus respond? He responds back with them with kindness. He responds back with them with, you know, he answers their question with a question. And so, you know, he treats them, not in a harsh, mean way, but he responds, you know, with, conviction and also with authority and doesn't back down from it. One of the other things was being made fun of, being called names or insulted. Was Jesus made fun of? Was he called names? Was he insulted? Yeah. He was blindfolded, when he was, you know, being crucified. He was blindfolded and they'd hit him in the face and they'd say, hey, if you're really Jesus, if you're really God, tell us which one of us hit you. You know, like teasing and making fun of and, you know, tempting him to do it. Obviously Jesus knew which one it was, right? He didn't have to answer the question, but he was mocked. You know, he responded with meekness and humility. He didn't cry out in anger or sadness or pain, when these things were going on. He focused on what was, most important. You know, the night before he was crucified, when he's praying in the garden, what does he pray for? He prays, not my will, but thy will be done, right? He's like, man, it's gonna be, tomorrow is gonna be rough. You know, like, I know that I'm gonna go through, you know, the most excruciating physical pain, right? Just the beatings and the torment. I'm gonna go through the emotional pain, right? The being blindfolded and mocked, and they're going to put a crown of thorns on my head to tease me about the fact that I claim to be, the King of the Jews, right? They're going to put this crown of thorns on my head. Then there's the spiritual, like, difficulty and the difficult things that come with that, being separated from God the Father, right? He knows, hey, tomorrow I'm going to die. And for that brief period of time, those 3 days are the only time in history where he's going to be separated, from God the Father. And so he's preparing himself the day before all of these things happen so that he's ready. He has a purpose. He's not going to rise up. He's not going to fight back. He's not going to do all these things. You know, he's preparing himself to face the things that that are coming his way, that he knows is coming his way. And so the way that we respond when we're bullied or picked on or teased or made fun of or physically attacked or any of those other things, the way that we respond is going to show our character, right? And so Jesus was preparing himself and he knew how he was going to respond. And I know Jesus is the perfect example. And so it's like, well, yeah, Jesus did that. That's good for him. But how am I supposed to do that? Like, you know, he was God. Like that's a hard standard to live up to. But the reason that, you know, a lot of these things are recorded for us is so that we can learn from them, so that we can read them, so we can apply them in our own life. And so, you know, how do we, if you're dealing with being bullied, how do you deal with that? How do you, you know, not fight back? How do you not, you know, raise up and try to defend yourself? Well, sometimes it has to do with pride, right? Like, you're not going to pick on me, you know, that kind of an attitude. And that can get us into a lot of problems, you know, a physical fight potentially. But we need to be prepared. Like, we need to be emotionally and spiritually, like, calm and, like, at peace with what's happening. And maybe, I'm not saying, like, just suffer through it. I mean, obviously, if you're being bullied, like, you should tell an adult about that. You should, you know, talk to somebody about it. Like, I'm not saying just lay down and take it. But I am saying that there is a way to handle this situation. And it's usually not, you know, yelling and trying to fight back, whether it's physically or verbally or whatever. I mean, you know that, like, when a bully is messing with somebody, if they respond in a way that, like, gets a rise out of them, the bully typically, that's what they're looking for. That's what they're trying to get at, right? That's what they want from you, is that you would respond in a way that is aggressive or to know that it's really getting under your skin. It's the times where you just, like, it, like, rolls off your back that, you know, as somebody who's bullying you, that's like, frustrating. This person's not, I'm not getting a response from this person. They're not responding in a way that I want them to. And so it's not giving them back, like, what they want out of the situation. And so, you know, there's a way to respond. And we never know, like, what the impact could be if we respond in a certain way. You know, if we respond in a calm and we don't respond back in a, you know, in an aggressive way, that can make an impact. Like, maybe not on the bully, maybe on the bully, who knows? If you watch, like, after school specials and stuff, it might turn the bully's heart around. You know, that may not be the case, but maybe other people see how you're dealing with that. And they might be like, man, that guy picks on you every day. That girl picks on you every day. Like, why are you not just, like, fighting back at this person, you know? And it may give you an opportunity to be able to, you know, tell them, hey, listen, like, they're just, you know, they're dealing with some stuff probably in their own life. And so I'm not going to give them the benefit of responding in the way that they want me to, you know? One of the other things is being pushed or shoved, tripped, or spit on. Obviously, Jesus was spit on during his time headed to the cross. You know, they spit in his face. And, man, if you watched Thursday Night Football, right? Anybody, you watch Thursday Night Football? Any of you guys watch it? When Jalen Carter spit at Dak Prescott, right? I mean, people are still getting spit on today. Like, you know, he... That was another one. I actually had that down. I was actually going to try and show a video of that. But, you know, when Travis Kelce got hit in the face... his response was like, you know, he turns to the official and like, hey, you gonna do anything about that? And then obviously the guy got, yeah, he smacked him in the side of the head. It was across the face.
Yeah, but what about the one spit on? What teams were
on? It was the Eagles and the Cowboys. It was like the first play, one of the first plays of the game. And like, Oh, was it before the game started?
Yeah.
Better defensive guys on the Eagles. He spit on Dak Prescott, the quarterback for the Cowboys, and he got ejected from the rest of the game.
Wait, so he got ejected?
That's what they say.
That dude got ejected for spitting on someone, but the guy that basically punched him with open hand.
Yeah. Okay.
It was like a...
All right, let's wrap this up. We got just a couple minutes left. Okay. I'm going to skip some of this. So... one of the other things was being, threatened with harm. That was one of the other things. You know, Jesus was not just threatened with harm. They actually did kill Jesus, right? We already read, Isaiah 53:7, how he's led, as a lamb to the slaughter. The last one that I have on here is having private information, photos, videos, purposely shared in a hurtful way. Okay, so you guys have probably, hopefully not experienced that personally, but you probably know what I'm talking about, people sending pictures, videos, or, you know, some other private information about somebody as a means to bully them, right, sending it to other people. Obviously, Jesus didn't have to deal with phones during his time on the earth, but he was very thoughtful about all the things that he did. He had a plan. He had a purpose of what he was doing, and he did not let, he did not let other people impact his plan, right? Jesus had a plan and a purpose for coming to earth. I told you guys before, I have a list in the back of my Bible. Every time I see where Jesus showed, where it says why Jesus showed up on the earth, I've got a list of all those different things. Jesus had a purpose for why he was coming to the earth. And he didn't let the things that were going on in his life, the outside influences, impact the purpose that he had. And so for us, for you guys, if you're born again, right, if you're saved, you have a purpose. If you're not saved, you're, you know, you need to get saved. And then you have a purpose. God wants to use you in some way. He wants you to reach your school or your job or whatever your mission field is. He wants you to reach the people that you're around. Okay, that's your purpose. And so does the way that you live your life and the way that you respond to bullying or other difficult situations, does that line up with what your purpose is? And so we need to think about the things that we are encountering and the way that we respond to that, and do those things line up? You know, when people are trying to make you respond in a way that is in opposition to how you're supposed to respond, or that goes in opposition to your purpose on this earth, you know, that's a problem. Somebody, last verse, read Matthew chapter 10, verses 9 and 10.
Mm-hmm. Provide neither gold nor silver nor brass in your purses nor scrip for your ring. Neither two coats, neither shoes, nor a stage, as the workman is worthy of his money.
Okay, so Jesus is talking about when he's getting ready to send his disciples out. He's telling them, hey, don't take a bunch of stuff. Don't worry about your possessions. The last thing on my list of things there was, you know, people destroying your things. Like, you know, a bully's going to mess with maybe your physical belongings. And so Jesus is telling his disciples, hey, don't even take a bunch of stuff. Like, don't worry about your physical possessions. Again, if somebody's breaking your stuff in a bullying way, you should tell somebody about that. I don't mean just let it go because it's all, none of this stuff really matters. It does matter. But Jesus tells his disciples, like, hey, don't worry about your physical possessions. Don't take a bunch of stuff. Like, I will provide for you along the way. Take, you know, just the basics that you need. The clothes on your back, the shoes on your feet, and just go. And I'll take care of everything else. I'll find you a place to stay. Don't worry about a bunch of money. I got people along the way that are going to feed you, and they're going to clothe you. Don't take extra coats and stuff for you to carry. Just, it's easier for you to travel, you know, with the basics. And so, don't get too tied up in the things that you have, is what he's telling them. And so, again, just remembering our purpose and remembering the reason that we're here is to reach others with the gospel. And so, how do we do that? We do that in all areas of our life. Obviously, like we talked about at camp, you know, we want you to tell people about Jesus. We want you to, you know, walk up to someone and tell them about Jesus. Or we want them to see you carrying your Bible. But those things are like one way. That's like one method. Right? But honestly, the way that you live your life, people seeing how you handle difficult situations, how you handle someone messing with you, how you handle people talking about you behind your back, how you handle people spreading rumors about you, or, you know, sharing private information about you, or whatever, all these different things we've talked about, those things are going to be more impactful on somebody seeing how you respond to those things, than just walking up to them and sharing the gospel with them, or than them seeing you carry your Bible. Obviously, those are great things, but the way that you live your life is going to tell more about who you are and is going to cause people to pay attention more than you just walking up to them and trying to tell them about Jesus, right? The way that we handle ourselves is more important. And so let's pray. Wednesday night is just a regular night.